You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar.
This episode is brought to you by our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
This is the Mythgreen Podcast. I'm Chris, and with me is...
Oren.
And...
Wes.
And this episode, we will reveal something astonishing. But whether that reveal will be satisfying, or whether that reveal will be just terrible, you can only find out.
I've already decided that I hate it, and nothing you can do will change my mind. Whatever the reveal is, it's not what I wanted, and it will never be as good as what I imagined.
Well, I have decided ahead of time that maybe there will be a reveal, maybe there won't be, but I'm just going to be completely ignorant to any possible foreshadowing and let it hit me regardless.
That's too bad, because I am naturally... like putting in careful and calculated foreshadowing all the way up through this episode to tell you what the end reveal is going to be.
Nope, I just want you to talk about cute things. That's it.
So yeah, this episode we're going to be talking about best and worst reveals, which we've done best and worst episodes before, but I think for reveals it is particularly relevant because reveals can be run the gamut of fantastic to just like a trash fire.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because like so much of a story often hinges on the reveal, right? Because the reveal is like what everything is building towards a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't go well, that like can ruin the entire story.
Mm-hmm. Well, a reveal certainly takes more coordination than mm-hmm. other types of story endings, right? Like if you have a big villain antagonist and you're going to have like your climax is just like a fight with the antagonist, then yeah, it can be done wrong, but at the same time, at the end, we know it's fairly simple. Usually the antagonist wins or fails. You know, heroes win or fail. But with reveal, it's kind of like an intellectual puzzle that has to be put together. It takes just more thought and more coordination between different aspects of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely almost always takes planning. And not all storytellers do planning.
I mean, there are definitely some storytellers who are just like, hey, if I reveal a new thing, that'll be cool. And, like, don't stop to think about, like, does the reveal that I just made actually work with the story I've set up until now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, again, if you're up for revising, you know, if you're a discovery writer and you want to write to a certain point and then you're like, oh, what if I did this cool, like, reveal twist at that spot? I think that would, like, really amp up the tension in the scene to make the rest of the story more interesting. That's totally fine. It's just that you have to go back and make things consistent with your reveal.
Right. And this can happen with outliners, too, actually. I've seen this happen where an outliner will, like, get to a point in the outline where they will, like, decide on a reveal and it doesn't work and just keep it. Like, so they technically planned it, but then they'll just, like, keep it all the way to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it can happen either way.
Mm-hmm. So, let's go over, Wes, do you want to choose a best or worst reveal?
Well, maybe, I feel like we can talk forever about the really bad ones. but I think I will start with a bad one, just because, this is one of the first ones that I really remember reading because, mm-hmm. and I mean, it's not like our normal, I guess, like type of story, but I'm going to talk for very shortly here about the Da Vinci Code, because mm-hmm. that villain reveal at the end of that book, spoilers ahead, basically that encapsulates like what I consider to be a bad reveal in that I was so far into the book, like I knew that the end was like a few short chapters away, and I was like, well, I still have no idea who the villain is. And I was like, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, surely they're not going to introduce some random person. And wait, hold on. We're not talking about that kind of bad reveal. But then I thought, okay, who is it definitely not of these known characters? And then I was just like, okay, it's got to be that guy. And then next chapter, I was like, oh yeah, it's definitely that guy. So in that case, yeah. It was like you had, there was a very limited character pool to draw from, and it was revealed way too late, right? Uh-huh. And so it was not satisfactory at all. It was just like, oh, great. Like, uh-huh. Here we are. The guy that was helping the whole time is actually the villain. Fabulous.
Yeah.
Right.
God, that can be so hard because, I mean, definitely good storytelling means paring down the story to what it needs.
Yeah.
And not doing more than that. But, like, the more efficient you get your story, like, it normally gets stronger. But then in some ways, if somebody's, like, actively looking, and a lot of times if you have a reveal, you've been building up to it, meaning there's a mystery, meaning your audience is actively trying to figure out the puzzle,
mm-hmm.
right? But if they figure it out, even though they're trying, they won't be happy. The irony of the situation is great.
Yes.
And it's almost in this case, it's like you're punished for making the story efficient. And this has definitely been a problem with Teen Wolf, where... And,
yay, Teen Wolf time.
Yeah,
yay.
Teen Wolf time. How long will we go on about Teen Wolf? Time will tell.
No.
Any case, where they definitely, from season to season, they will introduce new antagonists. And so, like, you end up... And it's a pretty well-told show with a pretty tight story. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you want to know who the season's antagonist, you're like, okay, so what are the characters who have been, like, newly introduced this season... You know, they have one mystery antagonist every season, I should specify, and like one known antagonist.
The thing you should really look at, though, is are there any new teachers?
Oh, there was one teacher who really seemed like an antagonist and wasn't, though. I think it's the chemistry teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That guy really seemed like he was up to something.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was involved in like 3 different magic plots, but was not magic in any way himself. That was very strange.
Yeah.
yeah. So that, I mean, I guess that the only thing you can sometimes do in that situation is add a few extra characters that are just there to be red herrings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or, I mean, ideally, I feel like what you do is have characters that are important for some other reason, but, like, construct a scenario in which it's credible that more than one of them could be the villain or the secret murderer or whatever, right? Because, like... That's definitely, I think, one of the hallmarks of a good murder mystery TV show is that you can't, like, just figure out who it is by ticking off who's left,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Like, there should be, like, you know, ideally there are at least a couple of people who you can imagine it might be, but then at the same time, it's equally frustrating if you just withhold information that the audience would need, and then it's like, the detective is super clever because they knew something you didn't. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
But in the case of the chemistry teacher, you know, he was, again, as you said, he was involved in 3 different magic plots. One of the reasons he was so suspicious is he was never a major character, but he had a reason to be present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was part of the mystery. He just wasn't the actual mystery antagonist you were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And so having, you know, characters that are more minor who fill other roles in the story, they're still part of the plot. It just gives you a little bit more mystery over who did it.
Can I mention a reveal that I really liked?
Yeah, let's do it.
So not every reveal is the answer to a mystery, right? Like sometimes it's just a twist.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was in Heroes season 2.
You what? Know,
the season that must not be named. Because it's awful in, like, every way. And one of the ways it's awful is that Hiro spends, like, most of the season in feudal Japan, like, trying to make a white dude into a better samurai. And it's just as bad as it sounds. But there is a cool thing where over the course of the season, they're talking about this mystery villain named Adam. I guess I'm wrong. I guess this is kind of a mystery. Disregard what I said previously. So they're talking about this mystery villain, Adam, that, like, nobody knows who Adam is because all the people who knew who Adam is are either dead or are not talking. And so, like, the younger generation is trying to figure out, like, what his deal is and who and what he's trying to accomplish and who he is. And, like, we don't know. We've never seen him. And so then Hiro spends this, like, way too long in the past with this dude who he like used to be his like who he thought was like his like
Wait,
his hero.
Is Hiro the one becoming a samurai?
No, Hiro is the time traveler.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And he goes to the past and like meets this guy who he thought was his like great hero samurai guy, and it turns out he's this like white dude who sucks. And so anyway, but we find out in the past that he has like he is also has powers. He has like a regenerative ability.
Okay.
And so then like we fast forward and Hiro comes back to the present and like that guy like walks out of the shadows and is like, "Hey Hiro, I'm Adam." And it actually worked really well because it was like they'd been building up who is this guy, and we had never it managed to be someone who we like completely discounted because he was from hundreds of years in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't like expect it to be him, but then when you thought about it, it made perfect sense because it's like, yeah, they never said that having a regenerative ability would make you immortal, but like that totally works.
Mm-hmm.
And it like clicks into place and like makes him seem way more threatening than he actually ends up being.
Hero season 2.
Because it's like, you know, it's like, oh man, he's been alive for centuries and laying plans, and he's like a Methuselah. What's his deal? And then it's like, okay, this is my plan. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever, Adam. But the actual reveal of him was very good,
mm-hmm.
And it was like one of the only points in season 2 that I actually enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, while we're on the subject of antagonists that are revealed, I mean, we already talked a little bit about the problem with some guy reveals.
Yep.
Where yep, it's like, we had no chance to hear about this person. And, like, a couple examples, I almost don't want to say it, but Twin Peaks
well,
is an example of the some guy reveal. Legend of Korra season 1 is that especially bad because Amar he's wearing a mask.
Yep.
And it suggests that the reason he's wearing a mask is because we would actually know who he was if we saw him. Nope. Mm-hmm. Nope.
Nope. He's some guy.
Some guy.
some guy. In a similar vein, there's the person who is like, it's just cliche and it was predictable. Like, it's exactly who you would think. Tanya Huff's The Fire Stone. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's a king with, like, a really suspicious advisor.
Mm.
And he's like, read this. I swear, like, it must not be this advisor. It's just too obvious. It's just too obvious. No, it was the advisor.
He
looks suspicious.
He was the bad guy.
Yeah. Another obvious one. I think this movie has a good one and a bad one. But Fantastic Beasts. Like, I mean, it was pretty obvious that Colin Farrell was... the bad wizard, what's his face?
Yes,
Johnny Depp.
That part,
Grindelwald.
I mean,
Grindelwald. Yeah,
Grindelwald. I mean, I was just like, he had the same haircut. It was just a different color. and also it's just like, this is clearly the bad guy, and then they're like, oh no, it's Grindelwald, and he's like, you fools, or whatever he says. I don't know. It's just like, that was, we all knew that from the second he was on the scene. Like, they didn't even try to distract.
I mean, I'll admit, I knew he was evil. I didn't realize he was gonna be Grindelwald in disguise.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't actually realize that Grindelwald was in this movie.
Yeah, I didn't,
like,
either.
I think they talked about him like once or twice, but I was actually sort of confused when he was like, I am Grindelwald. I was like, wait, who? Like, who is Grindelwald? I was like, oh, right. He's the guy they talked about in book 7. Okay, I remember him.
Yeah.
I was especially cued in, I think, when I watched that movie. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was just actually not tired or anything. Because like the opening like sequence has like, I mean, they come at you fast. Like, it's almost hard to, like, even, like, keep up. But it's, like, newspaper clippings, right, about, like, Grindelwald. And then, like, I mean, a hot second where, like, there's the back of his head and he, like, takes out a bunch of wizards. And then it's, like, back to, like, newspaper clippings or something like that. And then the show starts. So it's, like, we're going to massively cram in all this foreshadowing that there's, like, this villain in here. And then we'll just start the movie.
Right. Yeah, I think that the problem being that it sounds like Grindelwald is, from what I remember, is so much in the background for the rest of the movie. It's either A, you know that Grindelwald is going to be there, and he's, of course, a big deal Harry Potter-verse villain, and you're actively looking for him, in which case it's probably too obvious, or you don't even know he's supposed to be there at all. Mm. You're going along the story, have no idea Grindelwald is in the story, and then suddenly, poof, like, there's Grindelwald, and it feels very random.
Right, and it was weird also because, like, I actually didn't really feel like it needed to be Grindelwald to, like, explain what he was doing. I just assumed he was evil and power-hungry and, like, wanted the magic ghost for some reason.
Yeah.
Like all dark wizards in Harry Potter do.
Right. Or I feel like if we had more knowledge that, like, Grindelwald was actually, like, maneuvering in the background, I feel like that would have set a better stage for a character we knew who was already antagonist to be revealed to also be Grindelwald. Not that revealed is, I mean, if we already know a character is an antagonist, revealing they're, like, an extra badass antagonist doesn't have a huge effect necessarily.
Yeah, it did feel a little bit odd. It was like, okay, we captured him and we won, yay, and he was Grindelwald. It was like, what is this, a Scooby-Doo moment? We gotta take the mask off?
Right. Like... That only works if it, like, actually, like, complicates, like, you know, or adds to, like, somebody else's arc, right? With, like, the classic Vader reveal, right? It's like, well, we know that that's the bad guy, but, oh, surprise, it's your dad. Like,
right.
You know, that added a whole thing.
Right. Like, if anything, capturing him and learning that he was Grindelwald made the whole thing, like, better. Because then it was like, oh, okay, we also captured Grindelwald.
Yeah.
Good job. I didn't even know that was on the table.
It's a good day to be a Fed. A magical Fed.
We did a great job today. It really makes up for how we, like, murdered a kid. You know, great plan, guys.
And that's why it's a lot more typical to, like, introduce the villain as, like, a love interest. And then, like, in the background, but wait, the love interest is Grindelwald pretending to be good. You know, then it actually has some, like, ramifications on the story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, going back to good. Okay, so I think this one, you can tell me if you thought it was obvious. I actually did learn about it before it happened, but only because there was so much buzz. Like, it was impossible not to, like, get spoiled. So Harry Potter being a Horcrux in book 7. I actually thought that was a really good reveal that was set up really well. And again, if Harry Potter had not been such a, like, wildly popular book, I, like, feel like it would have had a better chance of being surprising. But it was also not something that was built up as a mystery, because we were talking about that difference where, you know, he is looking for the Horcruxes, but, like, the idea of Harry Potter himself being a Horcrux
is not
quite so actively.
I mean, I bet I enjoyed it. It wasn't, like, gasp. You know, but it was, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But also, I mean, I'm sure many people out there also, like, were old enough to remember, like, you know, book 4 came out and then we had to, like, wait a really long time for book 5 and then wait a long time and then wait a long, you know, and during that time, like, you know, yeah, we're reading and watching other stuff, but, like, we're also, like, talking about it. And, like, I'm pretty sure that the Harry is a Horcrux, like, theory, like, that I was exposed to that relatively early. If I were just to, like, suddenly mind wipe myself and read the whole thing through without interruption, then it might, I don't know, be a little bit stronger of a reveal, but maybe that wasn't really the point.
Yeah,
that would certainly be very handy. I had a hard time judging the quality of that reveal because I found the book itself so aggravating. Like, I was just like, okay, I guess Harry's a Horcrux. Sure, whatever. We spent like 5 million hours camping. I don't care anymore. my will to care about this has been sapped out of me by camping.
Because if there's anything people want to do, it's definitely go camping instead of hang out in a magical school.
I think that is a problem. The seventh book is just super belabored, and If they had just gotten right on, the book was much shorter and trimmer, and the search for the Horcruxes was shorter, then I feel like there would have been less time to, like, consider whether Harry Potter was one, right?
Maybe. So I have to admit, I actually don't think the solution is to make the book shorter, because it's actually not a very long book, if I remember correctly. It's like, not nearly as long as books 4 or 5.
It's pretty... Isn't it longer than 5?
Is it? Okay, maybe, never mind. I thought when I looked up on the shelf that it was like 4 and 5 are the giant tomes and 6 and 7 are actually not that
long. Well, 4, I think 4 is still the longest, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it is 7 is still long, but you're right that it is not long as some of the other books.
Yeah, it's not as long, but like I actually think the issue isn't that it was too long. I think the issue is that there was nothing for the characters to do, and I actually think, like, defeating Voldemort should take some time. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if there's a short book, and then they just, like, you know, do some stuff real quick, and then they take out Voldemort, it's like, okay, well, that felt kind of easy. So I get why Rowling invented a bunch of new Horcruxes for them to find, but, like, even then, like, realized that doesn't take long enough, and so made them go camping instead. But, like, I think there must be another solution. There had to be something more interesting they could have been doing.
Right, there just needed to be more plot. It was clear that, like, without the structure of Hogwarts, Rowling was kind of struggling to plot that book out.
Mm-hmm.
And that Hogwarts conveniently put all of the major characters together in one place and let them, like, bump into each other and, you know.
Okay, for the record, I was just completely full of it. Book 7 is significantly longer than book 4. Yeah, the only book longer than book 7 is actually book 5, which is, like, even longer than that. Okay. It's, book 5 is 250,000 words, book 7 is 198,000.
Okay.
And then book 4 is 190,000.
Okay, so it's slightly longer than book 4. Book 5 is, I have to say, book 5 doesn't feel longer than book 4 to me.
It does not. It actually went by pretty quickly.
Because it's better written than book 4.
Yeah, that's the secret.
Yeah. I think it does seem to be one of the few reveals that it feels like it is set up from the very beginning really well. And I kind of wonder, you know, the whole, like, him being a partial tongue thing, it's quite possible she built on that, because it doesn't feel like in book 1 when Harry talks to a snake randomly, like, that is an intentionally meant is a special wizard ability. It just feels like something colorful she just put in there. And then, like, in book 2 is like, oh, I've kind of established magic so that, like, people don't talk to animals all the time. Oh, I know, I'll make it a special ability, and then kind of built it up from there. But it still works really, really well with everything else that people are used to and have been established throughout the books.
Mm-hmm.
And has a lot of relevance for what the plot and what happens at the end of book 7. So I personally think that is you know, even if it was perhaps spoiled by buzz, I still think that's a really good reveal.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a fine reveal, honestly, and, like, I wasn't surprised by it, I think, because I already sort of figured out by the end of book 6 that Harry, like, needed to die in order for Voldemort to die, even though I didn't really get that he was a Horcrux, because I didn't really understand what a Horcrux was at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I'd, like, sort of figured, but I think that's one of those reveals that it works, even if I already knew about it, just because it clicks into place, everything's fine. And then, like, you know, the Holy Spirit of Dumbledore resurrects him, which doesn't fit as well, but that's a side thing.
What about the, I mean, I'm curious about your impressions about the surprise Snape is a heavily compromised guy and Dumbledore bullied him into being a good guy kind of thing. Like, I mean, where does that rate on the reveal list?
So, what reveal are we talking about? Because
Snape is dying, so here are my tears. And, well, I guess the worst reveal is probably the epilogue. Because, oh, gosh, surprise, no, he named his kid after
what
Snape.
What epilogue? There was no epilogue.
But, I mean,
Wait, so are we talking about the reveal where we find out that the reason that Snape is turned away from Voldemort is because Voldemort killed the woman he was, like, having a toxic obsession with?
Yes.
Is that the reveal we're talking about?
Yeah. When Harry gets all the context for, like, who Snape was, that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a terrible reveal because, like, it just confirms, like, that Snape is awful, but, like, also pretty much what I expected, because I was having a really hard time imagining, like, what could the reveal of Snape, what could it possibly be and match this character that we've established until now, who is, like, the most abusive ass in all of Harry Potter, second, like, only to Umbridge.
Yeah, and you can't say that there wasn't, like, foreshadowing with that, you know, the whole, like, eyeball thing, the every book, all the time. You've got your mother's eyes, and it's like, okay, So, all
right. Right.
Well, okay.
although
I mean, I want to say this. Besides, like, looking at, like, Snape's character altogether, I mean, Rowling just wants Snape to be two different things, I think, is the problem. But I will say that that reveal directly contradicts the scene that happens earlier in one of the earlier books. And Rowling tries to cover for it, but I don't feel like she does a very good job. And again, this is the hard part about reveals, especially when you're planning a series. You know, the other books have been published. You can't change what's in them now, right? Mm-hmm. In this particular case, it is in book five. Harry sees a, goes into Snape's pensieve and sees a scene from Snape's time at Hogwarts along with Harry's parents. And there is a scene where Harry's father bullies Snape and Harry's mother intervenes. And then Snape is, like, really mean to her in a way that definitely suggests, A, he does not like her in any way, and B, they are not familiar with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The wording of it, just, it's very clear. And so then later, like, she tries to put in that they were friends from childhood. So there's definitely some retconning happening in that reveal. That personally bugged me, besides just, like, the obvious flaw of the fact that Rowling wants Snape to be a better person than she actually shows him to be during the book series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that reveal is supposed to redeem Snape, and it just doesn't. But at the same time, like, I can't imagine what a reveal would be that would justify what Snape has done up until that point.
Right.
Like, and ironically, the reveal is actually makes Snape a fairly realistic character, is that he's an extremist who turned away from his fellow extremists, not because he changed his mind, but because he had beef with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like, most extremist double agents come from in real life. You know, people who get super high in the ranks of Al-Qaeda don't often have, like, sudden change of hearts. They get turned because either, like, you know, the government has something on them, or they, like, need to go to the government for protection because, like, they've pissed off someone else in Al-Qaeda. That's how that usually goes. It's almost never like, oh yeah, I was a wizard Nazi, and then I realized that being a wizard Nazi is wrong. You know, once you're that deep in, it's pretty unlikely you're gonna have a spontaneous change of heart.
Right. And one of the problems that Rowling has in writing Harry Potter series, and this problem just really affects Snape super hard, is the fact that Rowling just doesn't really distinguish between people being mean and people being outright, like, abusive.
Mm.
And, like, Snape is kind of at the center of that, where she wants it to be that he's just kind of, like, a not nice kind of mean person. But no, he is like, psychologically tearing apart his students. And we see him do that. And, like, in the end, the fact that he really liked Harry's mother doesn't, like, change that. It just feels like he was a stalker, I guess.
Yeah. It's like, we also find out he was kind of creepy towards women.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the reveal. And it's like, okay, I mean, I guess that does fit.
Yeah. But, I mean, certainly for some readers, some audience members, just seeing that he cared about somebody would make a difference to them, right? I'm sure that some readers definitely did become more sympathetic to Snape because of that reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've met them. They live on the internet.
My problem is that Snape as a character has so many problems that I just can't, like, the reveal can't fix it, you know?
Yeah.
Can I talk about another good reveal? Because we're coming up on the end of our time.
Sure.
Okay, so this is from Star Trek, from The Next Generation. And this one's actually not a mystery. I'm correct this time. And it's when they're fighting the Borg in Best of Both Worlds, and, like, Picard has been kidnapped, and they, like, go over to rescue him, and he's been assimilated. He has become a Borg, and it's like, what? This is actually not something we knew the Borg could do at this point. Like, of course, nowadays everybody knows the Borg are basically space zombies.
Right.
But at this point, and in fact, that's actually kind of a retcon, because they actually made it pretty clear that the Borg are normally not interested in biological material. They only want your technology. And making Picard into a Borg was a weird new thing they decided to try as a way to understand the humans and figure out what they're going to do with them.
Huh.
And it was, like, super cool, and also showed, like, and was also really scary, because it's like, oh man, Picard is, like, the greatest captain ever, if you're a Next Generation fanboy like me. And now he's a Borg, and he's bad. And then, like, there's like, you know, if you were watching this when it came out, there were like rumors that Patrick Stewart wasn't gonna come back to TNG. And it's like, oh no, is he gone? Is he just a Borg forever now?
Oh,
like,
no.
What? just a super good reveal. It looks so great. And it's even funnier when you realize how bad it could have been, because their original plan was that that Picard, the Borg, were going to merge Picard and Data.
What?
That was like
what?
Because like apparently, at least according to the behind the scenes stuff that I've read, the idea of Picard being part machine was actually arrived at like before the rest of the episode.
Oh wow!
And their original idea was that the Borg, for some reason, would like merge Picard and Data together so that Picard would be like part android. And fortunately they did not do that, because that would have been ridiculous.
Tuvix.
yeah exactly.
Tuvix. Then of course the crew murder the the Picard and Data. I'm referring to an episode in Voyager which is messed up. For anybody who's not familiar with it, we can link in the show notes.
I'll put that in the show notes. But yeah, so that's just a really good reveal, and it's just like it makes everything worse, and is a great way to end that part one of Best of Both Worlds, and makes you like really want to watch part two.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is honestly maybe a little mean if you have to wait 3 months to watch part two like you originally did. Now you can just go watch it and it's fine. But
Well, I mean, the show was potentially going to be canceled. So that was their effort to revive it, from what I hear, right? So it worked.
You
have never heard
sure
this?
This? I haven't heard that particular take, but I can't say that it's wrong.
Okay.
I know that, like, you know, TNG had been in danger of cancellation like earlier before season 3, but I could be wrong about that too.
I'm not like super Star Trek behind the scenes guru, but that's what I had heard, is that The Best of Both Worlds was their attempt to, like, get a third season at all. And
or a fourth season.
Fourth season. Now you know I'm not a behind-the-scenes guru.
All right, well, we are out of time. So we will leave all of our listeners on that note. They can go and look up whether or not anything we just said about the behind-the-scenes stuff is true. Thank you both for discussing this with me. Those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can leave a comment on the website at mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you like the way we talk about stories, check out how we write them. Original fiction is now on mythgreens.com. Presented in audio on our new podcast, Mythgreens Storytime. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreens Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself by Jonathan Coulton.